This is embarrassing, but thank you very much. Can you hear me? Do I need the microphone? Okay. Just a second. Now it's better? Okay. I have to tell you, I cannot show. Okay, I have to tell you, I never gave a talk like this with this huge screen that far up. So I was lent this marvelous green laser, which is great because I never see the red lasers. I'm colorblind in the red. But it's also powerful, so be careful with the questions you ask. So I thought, given that this is at the perimeter incident, I should start with something like that. This is actually true. This was from one of my talks. There was a time when I was doing theoretical physics. This is quantum electrodynamic calculations in atoms. But 4 years ago, 4 years ago, everything changed. And I took a sabbatical at the London Regional Cancer Center. And at that point, I switched totally from that perceived type of physics to something that barely has, as you will see, any physics at all. So why a physicist doing this? The people at the cancer center that introduced me to medical physics are Jerry Battista, who is now also the chair of medical biophysics at Western. And he's a very famous radiation physicist. And Jeff Chen, who was a postdoctoral fellow with me doing calculations of energy levels of atoms in magnetic fields at the surface of neutron stars. He's now the chief medical physicist at the London Regional Cancer Center. He switched, at that time it was hard to get a job, and he said, I don't want to drive a taxi. So he's better off than me, right? Because he's a medical physicist with the salary of a medical physicist at a hospital. I'm doing medical physicist with the salary of a physicist at the university. So I get the wrong end of the lollipop. And the latest developments, still my research group is still at Western, are Carol Johnson and David Turnbull, who are research associates, and Thomas Neff, a postdoctoral fellow from the University of Heidelberg. Before I start, I want to show you, it's a lot of fun to actually work in this. Everything you are going to see was done from scratch. No available software was used except the software to write programs. So you end up writing all this interactive stuff with buttons to press and things happen and pictures appear and calculations are done. But it's truly, very quickly you build something that is of actual use. So for example, the numbers in here correspond to how to position the machine that is going to deliver radiation. And I will show you what these numbers are. So, and more stuff. Because you try all kinds of things, parameters of this and that, and what is going to work better. I wanted to show you that there is a lot of fun in doing this. So my real aim in here is to talk about the field of medical physics, nothing to do with the Perimeter Institute. So particularly, my new department at Ryerson is extremely dynamic. It's a group of 11 extremely good medical physicists in many fields. I will tell you what we are doing. With its very strong interaction with Princess Margaret Hospital, Sunnybrook Hospital, and myself as well with the London Regional Cancer Center. So to give a flavor of what really medical physics is about, I thought, you know, in a very unselfish way, I will talk about what I am doing. Just because I know what I'm doing, more or less. So radiation therapy. As you well know, there are two methods, mostly, to take care or try to destroy cancer cells. One is chemical methods, chemotherapy. And the other, which accounts for about half of the treatments, is radiation therapy. Radiation therapy, right now, at Ryerson we are looking into other modalities, but right now radiation therapy can only deal with localized tumors. You cannot irradiate the whole body. You kill the patient. So it can only work with localized tumors. The way it works is the following. You have a machine. Really, all the accelerators and the really heavy stuff is behind this wall. This is a fake wall. And what you have is electrons coming in. They are bent, and they are accelerated. They are going at very, very high speeds. Their energies are between 6 and 18 megaelectron volts. And here they are bent by a strong magnet. And when they arrive in here, they hit a surface. So they are stopped immediately. I don't know if you remember Bremsstrahlung. They emit the same, more or less, the same amount of energy, conservation of energy, but it's spread it out in the form of radiation. Okay, it's gamma rays. In there, they still call them X-rays for some reason. So here you see this machine. Here you see the patient. So they come, and the radiation comes out through here. So this part of the machine is called the gantry. And you can see that the gantry can rotate around the patient. This is very important. So you can irradiate from any side of the patient. It can go 360 degrees around the patient, and you can position it very, very accurately. Okay? Before I go on, by the way, don't hesitate to interrupt me at any time. Okay? Ask any questions at any time. If I don't see you, just shout. Okay? Anything except personal questions. So, and even if you don't understand because of my accent, I don't know if you realized I'm not Canadian. Please let me know. Okay. So, no, that is very different. The gamma knife is a very narrow, very, very well-defined beam that will essentially burn a point at a certain depth. This is a very wide beam of radiation that comes out and essentially can cover the complete width of the patient. Okay? You will see one case where you will see how it can really cover the whole pelvical area for the case of a prostate tumor later on. I asked for 2 hours for my talk. I noticed that for some reason they made a mistake and they put 45 minutes, but anyway. That was not a joke. Okay. So I start in medical physics. I go to my first talk and I don't understand the thing they're talking about. I didn't know. And the reason is, if you want to be somebody in medical physics, you have to understand acronyms. Everything is acronyms. It's the same in the business world, in economics, you know. Everybody uses their own acronyms. So a few acronyms. The isocenter is the axis around which the machine is rotating. And usually you try to put it inside the tumor. So as the machine is rotating, it's always trying to attack the tumor. More or less, the tumor will be at the center of the rotation. So it will be irradiated more or less by the same amounts from each angle. Is this clear? Right? So the isocenter is essentially the center of rotation. So you could see it more or less in there. The planned target volume. This is interesting. This area in color is the tumor. And this is more than appears in a CT scan that the patient is subjected to before treatment. And by that, the radiation oncologist, by looking at the X-rays, decides there are chances there will be cells, cancerous cells, still in these areas. All of that is taken into account. This is really what we need to irradiate. That is the cancer. This line around it, and it's about half a centimeter bigger, more or less on average, could be 1 centimeter sometimes, is done artificially. We are actually artificially irradiating and killing healthy cells. That's what is called the planned target volume. And the reason we have to do that, the reason we have to do that is that the main reason for my research. I don't know, some of you might have been treated for cancer in this audience. I'm sure that most of you must have had friends that were treated for cancer. And if anybody that is going through radiation treatment of cancer undergoes a CT scan, you know, computed tomography, many slices of X-rays from many angles, a CT scan of the area that is going to be treated a couple of days before the start of treatment. And that's it. The complete treatment, the whole thing, is based on that initial CT scan. Now, did you have radiation treatment? Radiation treatment lasts for 6, 5, 6, 7 weeks. I cannot hear. Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. It's usually a bit less. It's usually half. Yeah. So it's usually 5 days a week. You rest Saturday and Sundays. It's only a couple of minutes each day. And you rest to allow the healthy cells to regenerate. They regenerate faster than cancer cells. The problem is, it's a long time after the CT scan. The tumor will change. If it's a neck tumor, I will show you a neck tumor. That is a neck tumor. I will tell you, this is a patient lying with the face up. This is the neck. This is the spinal cord. And this is the tumor. Besides, quite a large mass. The problem is, it can move from day to day. Actually, in this case, it will shrink. But actually, a bit of this will shrink as well, of healthy tissue. If we are dealing with a prostate, well, if the bladder is full, the prostate will move down. If the rectum is full, the prostate will move up. We don't know where it is that day. There are no X-rays done that day. I will tell you why. You will see why it cannot be done. And so you add this just in case. Just in case it moves. Just in case. Just in case. The patient is positioned quite accurately using lasers each day. Any questions about this? That's what we call the planned target volume. So that will be our area. OER, the organ at risk. There is always an organ at risk that you have to try to avoid as much as you can. In this case, the spinal cord. For example, in this case, this cannot receive at any point more than, let's say, 50-55%. There are very strict regulations than the dose of energy deposited in the tumor. Okay? If you do more, the patient dies. So you have to be very careful. And there is always an organ at risk. If it's a tumor in the lung, well, you can have the heart, the other lung. Okay? And then you have healthy tissue around it that it's neither an organ at risk, neither a target volume. But the problem is radiation has to go through it. The only way for radiation to penetrate is going through that. So you don't want any hot spots in there. Okay? I call this, all the rest, ATR. That's my acronym. So some people started to use it. Nobody called it anything. Okay? So in the future, when this becomes famous, you can tell, I saw the guy that created ATR. That, if anything, that is already my contribution to medical physics. So ideally, we would like to have what we call adaptive radiation therapy. Imagine, each day, or every second day, but let's say each day the patient comes, a new CT scan is taken, okay? You don't need to worry about that. You're already giving so much energy to kill the tumor that the energy from the X-rays is minimal. Each day a CT scan, you see exactly the new shape and the position of the tumor. You re-optimize, you plan again, and I will tell you what we mean by that, the treatment, and you do it. But it cannot be done. It's impossible. Nobody can do this. And I will show you now why. As the beam comes out of the machine, it's given a shape. This is interesting. Using these leaves, these are very thick, of heavy material. So radiation cannot pass, cannot penetrate these leaves. It doesn't go through. It will only go through this opening. And the opening is done by the position of these leaves, and that's controlled by computer extremely quickly. Those leaves move extremely fast and extremely accurately to a fraction of a millimeter. You can position them, okay? And the idea when this was introduced was to do, here is the idea, it goes through only where it's open. And the idea was to do what's called conformal radiation treatment, and that is, as the gantry, remember the gantry, that arm, moves around the patient, then the shape of the opening changes according to what you see, the projection you see from that direction. So from the side, you will see this kind of projection, round and a protuberance. And as the gantry comes in here, if it's my head, it will see more or less an egg shape with two little things. So this is able to do that. But this was not enough. Let me show you. Here you see a beam coming from the bottom right, okay? And blue means no radiation absorbed, red means a lot absorbed, and it goes all the way through yellow to green, less radiation absorbed. And you see what happens. There's nothing absorbed in air. As it comes into the body, in this case the neck, you see, there is a lot absorbed in this area, and that less, because, you know, as it's absorbed, there is less energy left in the beam to deposit. It is clear. You see that? Yeah, I'm sure. So there is much less deposited here. So this is a terrible treatment. There is more going to the spinal cord than to the tumor. So we can rotate the beam and take it from the top. Now there is less in the spinal cord than in the tumor, but you see it's bad. There is more in here than in here in the tumor. And actually, we are burning healthy tissue. This is would look like a good treatment. It doesn't even touch the spinal cord. But again, we are burning here, and it's not homogeneous along the tumor. Let's go on. So from the last one, look what I can do. I can send two beams. This looks pretty good. I avoid the spinal cord, and I have pretty well a homogeneous distribution on the tumor. Did anybody here have somebody that was treated for a neck tumor? Okay. One of the immediate things you notice after a few weeks is they suffer from burns. And you can see why. The two-beam approach has been used for a long time. It's good, but there are side effects. One is burning. You see that, right? And you can actually see it on the skin. And the other is it affects it also the salivary gland. And this is a terrible quality of life. Okay, you're always dry. There is no saliva. It's terrible. And that's recovered, but it takes 7-8 months. Okay? Question, can we give a better quality of life to a patient? But it's very effective. Huh? Let's see. I showed you I can rotate the beam. Suppose I send 50 beams at equal angles, right? What is it? Okay, separated by equal angles, 50 beams. And remember, I can change the shape from each angle. So from each angle, it will irradiate only what the cross-section it sees of the tumor. By the way, I'm only talking of one slice in here. At the very end, I will show you three-dimensional work. So you see, this is pretty good, and there is no burning, but it's not that good on the spinal cord. And people immediately recognize this problem. And you can see, these are isodose lines, you know, like isolines. And you can see the spinal cord gets between 60 and 80% of the dose to the tumor. The patient cannot survive. The same patient, I will take you now to another slice, and another spot in the neck. The tumor starts to wrap itself around the spinal cord. If I irradiate from 50 angles, this is what I get. And you can see it's terrible. It's good for the tumor, but the spinal cord gets the same dose as the tumor, and the patient cannot survive that. So the question is, can we do it better? And here is where the physicists come in. When we educate students in physics, we are not just teaching them physics, mechanics, electricity and magnetism, quantum mechanics, not just that. We teach our students how to approach a problem and try to find a solution to that problem in mathematical ways. But we teach the student to be creative, okay, to try to look at symmetries, to try to look at aspects of the problem that we can solve. And that is the reason that the planning of radiation treatment in hospitals, what I'm going to show you part of it later on, is done only by physicists. Isn't that amazing? Even though there is very little physics in it. And that's why, as you well know, physicists do as well, so well in the stock market, right? I mean, as employees. So here we come to something, a new idea that came up. And these are the most modern machines for radiation treatment. And they use what is called intensity modulation. Medical physicists will call it IMRT. Remember, acronyms, acronyms. Intensity modulated radiation therapy. Okay. It's funny. I'm accustomed to give my talks in front of the screen. I didn't expect this. I need two of these things. Okay. Oh, gosh. Okay. Here are two leaves. A pair of leaves. Here you have a pair of leaves. As designed, they are designed to look slice by slice at the shape we see of the tumor. Suppose instead of opening those leaves like that, I do the following. Consider, remember, I'm just looking at one pair of leaves. I open them a little bit. That allows a narrow beam to go through. We call it a beamlet. I give it an intensity. Then I move this little opening, a different intensity. I move it, a different intensity, and so on. I'm dividing each slice into very narrow strips. Okay, each one with a different intensity. And on top of that, I have all the angles from which I can irradiate. Can I do something better? This is the way beams would look, okay? This is a phantom. Phantom is just a piece of gelatin that we use to calibrate equipment. This is the same case. And you can see these are exaggerated. These beamlets are narrower than that. But you can see they're trying to avoid the spinal cord. But you see this. Each one has a different intensity. Can you see that? So we are going to use, then, irradiation from different angles and the division into beamlets to try to produce a good radiation treatment plan. Okay. So in order to do that, I have to assign to each beamlet the correct weight. Weight, in this case, has the same meaning as intensity of the beamlet. I want homogeneous distribution in the tumor. Avoid this as much as possible. And in here, try to do the best you can as the radiation goes in. Now, how is that done? It's being done right now. How is it done? Remember, what we know the result we need, we don't know what are the weights. Now, how many weights, how many intensities do we need to calculate? In a usual treatment, let's say, with seven angles, it's of the order of 3,000. You have to find 3,000 optimal weights for these beamlets. This is a very hard problem. So it's done by a search. Search is what in the Perimeter Institute will call, because it looks fancy, really trial and error. Try this, try that. This doesn't work as well. Let's try something else. They're very sophisticated trial and error search routines. But this is the problem. This is why we cannot take a CT scan each day and re-optimize the system. Because optimizing this number of beamlets takes hours. This is the problem. I'm sure nobody knew about this. I didn't when I started. So, but it is done. There are other problems with this type of optimizations, the numerical searches. And I don't know if any in here does that at all, but you can fall into local minima. In other words, you minimize and you obtain something that gives you a totally wrong result. And it really happens. And so you have to restart the search again. But there is an alternative to this. It's very, very fast, and it cannot be used. So when I came to the London Regional Cancer Center, here I was in the office with Jerry Battista and Jeff Chen, with Jerry and Jeff. And they decided that, look, he's coming from atomic physics. Let him come with his new ideas. So they told me, don't read the literature. Don't see what others did. And I did it. So I started working on this. So immediately, from atomic physics, I came up with an idea. How is it done these days? Just a little bit of mathematics, just to make it a bit more respectable. Okay, it's not necessary, but anyway. You have a function, which is called an objectivity function. It's like a variance that you want to optimize. This is the dose, the energy per unit mass deposited inside the tumor, at each point inside the tumor. This is the prescribed dose, epsilon. That's physicists for you. Whenever you can, always use a Greek letter. Makes you feel really, really good, particularly when you talk to oncologists, okay? Okay. So here is the prescribed dose. It's the same everywhere inside the tumor, and that's determined by the oncologist. And you can see, if the dose deposited at each point is equal to the prescribed dose, this term will be zero. It's positive always because it's squared, so this is positive or zero. Right. Inside the organ at risk, the minimum of this is when the dose inside the organ at risk at each point is zero. This is the ideal. Zero everywhere in the organ at risk, exactly the prescribed dose in the tumor. You can never do that. You have to go through the organ at risk to get to the tumor sometimes. So these are what are called importance coefficients. If this is larger, you compromise now. You give more importance to a good dose in the tumor, sacrificing the organ at risk. If this is larger, you give more importance to try to avoid the organ at risk. Is this clear? So here we have a function that is positive or zero, zero being the absolutely ideal treatment. This is a very simple case, okay? This has much more many terms. So, and the dose at each point is the sum of the dose deposited by each beamlet. Then we express this in terms of weights. So you imagine a beam with a unit intensity. If I double the intensity, the deposition at each point is doubled. Everything scales. This is remarkable because this has a different value at each point, but this is a constant for the whole beamlet. So nothing is mine in here. Everybody knows this, okay? So you rewrite it in terms of weights. I will go a bit quicker now. This is the way it looks. Now, I want the minimum. So what did we do with each our student? You want the minimum, you take the first derivative, and you make it zero. In this case, by changing the weights. Okay? So here you have of the order of thousands of derivatives, okay, that you have to meet. So you set those to zero, and this is what you obtain. I'm going to go quickly. I just want to show off a bit, okay? So, well, I'm at the perimeter, so. Okay. So here is a neat trick. I look good with this one. I change the order of summations. You can do that always. But if you do that, this quantity does not depend on the weights. It's a constant. It's an array. It has an index I and an index j. It's a strange array involving the dose deposited at any point by two beamlets. And this is a vector. This is also an array. So I can give them names. And guess what? I used Greek letters. So these are arrays of constants. And they are calculated once before treatment. Only once, because they never change. All you change trying to optimize is the weight. The weight is what you change. You can also change the importance parameters. So I put all the arrays together, and this is what you end up with. A system of linear equations. That's all it is. And we teach, right, our students systems of linear equations. And the solution is simple. You want to solve it, invert this matrix. And there are hundreds of routines in the web, in any language you want, Fortran, C, C++, anything, Pascal, to invert the matrix, solve a system of linear equations. And they are very, very efficient. So I use the Fortran program from LA Park. So this is essentially all we are doing. That's all we have to do to optimize the radiation treatment. Only instead of two unknowns, is a few thousand unknowns. but it works. And you will see how fast this happens. I was elated. I was so happy. I felt like the smartest guy in the hospital. I was there in the hospital, in Victoria Hospital. But there is a problem. If you do it, you're really working in a vector space. And components can be negative. You get weights that are negative. What's a negative intensity? Imagine going to Canadian Tire saying, I need a light bulb, and you know, how powerful. Well, I would like it negative 40 watts. You can see the employee just trying to find that button to press. And I mean, some things cannot be negative. They can't. So I went to Jerry Batista. My little corner was beside his office, and I said, everything is fine, but I get negative weights. And I said, oh, yeah, well, everybody knows that. Remember, I didn't read the literature. Okay. So if that happens, you have to constrain the ways to be positive, and then you have to do a search. Once you constrain, you lose the linear system of equations, and it's gone. And at that point, Jerry Batista brings up a book, one of the sources for radiation treatment. And in chapter 2, under treatment plan optimization, he starts by making a parallel mathematically with the CT inverse image reconstruction in CT in computed tomography. And he proves mathematically, rigorously, the impossibility of doing this. So, at least I was still teaching courses. No, I was in sabbatical, but I knew I was going to. At that point, you feel like going back to Argentina, and now I became vegetarian and grow corn instead of raising cows. But, or you keep on trying. This is from the book, a couple of quotations. And essentially what he says is tough. We really cannot do it. If you want to do it exactly, you end up with negative weights. That's unphysical. So you are stuck with doing a search. And that's all you can do. And here comes physics. So at that point, I said, let's start from scratch. And let's look at the simplest case. So, you know, okay, how does physics describe a running horse or a trotting horse? First, you consider the point horse on a frictionless surface, right? That's the horse. Then you make the horse a sphere, but no rolling yet. Okay, just sliding. Then you let it roll. And then you add little spheres at the four spheres at the bottom, and maybe two tiny spheres there, whatever. But the idea is that you are increasing the level of complexity with which you are analyzing a problem. That's a typical physics approach. But there is more than that. We also can look at symmetries. And symmetries are at the heart of theoretical physics. Oh, look, I am at the right spot. The whole body of modern theoretical physics is based on symmetries, right? Symmetries have very, very deep implications. Okay, so let's look in here. This is considered a cylinder inside another cylinder. No organ at risk. This is the tumor. This is the outer, the skin, let's say, and tissue, if you wish. And this is one slice. And the center is at the isocenter. Remember? The center of rotation of the gantry. Perfectly symmetric. And I put in there 80 beams. No beamlets, just beams. 80 beams. 80 in 360. So each beam is, what, 3.5 degrees apart. Okay? Now, imagine the following. So here you have one beam. The other, you can see my hand shaking. Okay. The other beam. Now, imagine I tell you, close your eyes. Don't, okay? It's a rhetorical thing. Imagine I say, close your eyes, and I rotate this by 3.5 degrees, and I say, open your eyes. Could you tell? No. That's it. What's the result of that? This is the optimal solution. All the beams have to have the same intensity, period. Took us a lot of time in our paper to convince the medical physics referees of this statement. So, but I just said before that if I optimize, I get negative weights. Then all the beams cannot be the same. Something is wrong. Do you see the point? And it's not in the optimization process. Something is wrong. What is interesting is in that book, the next topic is exactly this case. But he missed the point. He did it for a different reason. It can be solved analytically. But he missed the point. Isn't that something? So, it turns out that impossible is possible. I had to cut down my talk. I can go show you, if anybody's interested, more rigorous plots of what happens in this symmetric case. But the impossible is actually possible, and here comes Fido. The reason for Fido is one of my ex-students is now a graduate student here at the perimeter, and everybody knew I always took my dog to my lectures and to my office. So I love my dog. So Jerry Battista was the one that called it FIDO, Fast Inverse Dose Optimization, our acronym. And how do we avoid negative weights? And here we come. Before doing any mathematics, presently, and this sounds credible, okay? The addition of the dose deposited by all beam nets at each point in the organs at risk should be zero, ideally. That makes sense, right? I have all kinds of beamlets going to that point. I want, ideally, that to be zero. So mathematically, how does that happen? Imagine I only have two numbers. So if I say A plus B zero, the only solution is a negative result. The negative weights are part of the optimization function they are using. I'm shouting. Is this too loud when I shout? Okay. So I can shout louder. Okay. So what if instead of that, in FIDO, what we said is the dose deposited by each beamlet in the organ at risk should be ideally zero. If they are all positive and I want the sum to be zero, each one has to be zero. Why not put it that way? And how, this is the way it's before, and this is now. Look at this. Fix your eyes on this and repeat, I love this lecture, I love this lecture. Okay, but you see the difference. Yeah, that's a bad joke, that's okay. And the idea is we can achieve it by just adding the squares. Can you believe it? This was it. That was it. That's a patent in medical physics. I'm not joking. So essentially, we are changing this term in the objectivity function by this term in the objectivity function for the organ at risk. And sure enough, we avoid the negative weights. So not only that, but we have an absolute minimum. It's a quadratic objectivity function. And this actually works. And I will show you some results. I'm rabbiting in. Here is that slice, the slice with the wrapped tumor wrapped around the spinal cord. This was the very first result I obtained, and believe me, I was shouting. I was so excited to see this blue inside the in here. No absorption. And you see how it happens. This is, again, I will show you stuff right now that it cannot yet be achieved, okay? You will see, I'm sending in here beams from 20 gun triangles, but I'm trying to prove a concept. And you see what's happening. I'm sending it from many angles. Each one comes in with a very slight intensity, but they adapt the right way in the tumor. And then I look how long it took, by the way, the optimization. This is 1,000 beamlets. It took a quarter of a second. That's it. That's all it takes. This is on a desktop PC, and this was done a couple of years ago. So right now, you can do it about 3 times faster, just on a desktop PC. And let me take you to a limit, 60 gun triangles. This is to check the speed of this thing. And you can see it's 3,000 beamlets. It took 12 seconds. That's a typical number of beamlets in a three-dimensional optimization. And here I will show you the isodoses, and look at this. The 98%, look how it follows the shape that of the area we have to irradiate. Isn't that amazing? And look how it decays quickly to almost nothing. It's 15% only in this corner. That's it. Isn't that, that's incredible. I still get amazed by this. 9 angles, it's not that good. And look at this result. This is truly remarkable. Let me show you again. It's very hard with a cylindrical symmetry to produce a square-like shape, okay? Again, this is 2300 beamlets, 5.5 seconds to optimize. That's it. And look again at the 98%. It actually follows the square corners. It's incredible. So not only does it work fast, but it works really, really well. I sell used cars as a side business. Here we come to your question, and here you can see this is a prostate cancer. And this is the full width of the patient at the pelvis. So you can see the beams actually can cover that area. These are the femoral heads, okay, the top of the big bones in our legs. And they are avoided. And I will show you, I will enlarge that. This is the rectum. Now, the prostate is smaller than this. But remember, we have to add a margin because of motion and because of uncertainties, remember. And the reason we have to do it is because we cannot take a CT scan each day. That's the only reason. It's not because we are not sure if there are cancerous cells there. So you see, because of that, part of the rectum has to be sacrificed. But not the rest. The rest has to stay alive. So you need to be able to irradiate all of this equally, but try to avoid the rest. And look at this. This is a remarkable, remarkable result with a huge gradient in here from total dose to no dose. 1,600 beamlets, it took 1 second to optimize. 1 second. So if you want to start changing importance parameters, saying, okay, I can give a bit more to the rectum, I will try again. 1 second. Right now, when people try to change those parameters to produce a good planning, it takes half an hour, they go out for a coffee and come back. So you cannot try it that many times. This changes the whole concept. Because this reoptimization with present planning system would take a couple of hours each day. You cannot spend a couple of hours for each patient each day optimizing a planning system. Again, I don't hear. Our system is not yet implemented. This is all in development. With ours, it would be done. The CT scan doesn't take any time, and the most modern radiation machines come with a head to give radiation for treatment and another one to give a low energy radiation for a CT scan. And they rotate together. So you can pass it once without moving the patient. The patient stays there, get the CT scan. You have to redelineate. That can be done quickly by now with techniques. But then you have to reoptimize the plan. You have to find again these thousands of weights. And that's what takes a long time. And we don't have that time. We have too many treatments to make in each day. That is the problem. Does that answer your question? With this, yes. Yeah. There is the other aspect of the new delineation of where the tumor is. There is a lot of work done all over the world on that, and that's very advanced. That's imaging techniques. Yes. The slowest part is once you know where it is to find again what are the optimal weights. That is what takes a long time. Yes? That's we were thinking about this. It depends. No, it's not fast enough to be continuous right now, But we have in mind a different mode of delivery, but that will come in the future, that does not rely on thin beamlets. It relies on the full size of the beam without dividing it, but continuous. And that's a very hard problem. But yes, we are thinking of that. And for that, yes, it could do it. Any more questions? OK. Sorry. Oh, sorry, I didn't, yeah. It won't change the length of time of the treatment. There is, because the idea is the following, and this is still under research. Presently, we do believe that it is much more effective to give small amounts each day rather than large amounts in a small number of days. There are some cases in which people are experimenting with giving larger amounts of energy each day. And again, you are playing with the fact that you give and wait until next day, let's say. So healthy cells regenerate, cancer cells also, but slower. And by repeating this again and again and again and again, eventually you kill the cancer cells. That's the idea behind this repetition over that many days. Which is the most effective? There is still research on that, but presently, that is what is believed to be the most effective approach. It won't decrease the length of time, the number of weeks needed for treatment. No, it will just allow a more accurate treatment to the patient. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes. 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 And that is the idea. By doing each day, we would not need that margin at all. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Any other? These are great questions. Particularly because I could answer them. I'm new in this, so when I go to talk about this in hospitals, I have the jitters. This is a remarkable case. This is the bladder, and this is the target volume for a prostate case, and it had to be done this way. And again, you can see how this followed that shape. So we can do it. And now I come back to the question, then, why medical physics? For one, unlike all other branches of physics, whatever you do has an immediate impact to humanity. And that's a feeling as a physicist I never had before. And I would never step back from what we are doing, never. It is remarkable. The other regarding our students is that there is a high demand. The salaries are very good. And the future is totally open. There are huge amounts of grants of money coming from governments going into biomedical research. And that includes medical physics. I know how many of you know of the Mars Initiative in Toronto, of which Ryerson is a part of. This is a huge, huge, I don't know how many stories, building. It's almost like a city block behind In the area where Mount Sinai and Princess Margaret and Toronto Western, where they all are in there. And the idea is each story, it's huge, has these enormous labs with a lot of money, but they have research of what the perimeter is for theoretical physics. That becomes for medical physics, of trying to develop new ideas. But they also have lawyers, people doing the liaison with industry and patenting and so on. It's a huge, huge thing. Why Ryerson? We are essentially with people in the department, the largest department. Usually medical biophysics departments have adjunct professors coming from all over the place, from hospitals, from all over. We have a large group now. We hire two more. We are 13. And we do cutting edge research in all the branches of medical physics. Not a traditional medical. We don't have just CT and MR. And radiation therapy. For example, this is a beauty. Okay, magnetic nanoparticles. You attach a protein that takes them to cancerous cells. And this will go to metastasized spots as well. It doesn't have to be localized. You put the patient into a weak magnetic, oscillating magnetic field, and you image the tumor. And you increase the frequency, and you hit the tumor. You destroy the DNA. You destroy the cancer. This is all under development. This is also a beauty. Through waveguides, you bring in laser light. So you illuminate, and then you listen for the ultrasound. And it's amazing what you can do with that, including heating up, including killing the tumor. I don't have much time left. We have very strong collaborations with Princess Margaret, Sunnybrook, and Heidelberg. And all of them are going to be, our programs are starting in September, in not just supervise an undergraduate and graduates, but also in graduate supervision. This is my dog and myself. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to email to me at all. We have more stuff. I don't have time left to talk to you. But I want to remind you that on the 12th of June, we have a fabulous, fabulous workshop at the CAP conference in St. Catharines at Brock University. The CAP does that every year, wherever the conference is held. The program is wonderful. The second half of the page also shows that the evening before on Sunday, Ernie is giving the most prestigious lecture of the CAP, the Herzberg Memorial Lecture. He was unanimously chosen, which was a tremendous honor that made us all very, very happy. And I very strongly invite you, recommend this workshop. It's a fabulous day. The program is on the web. You can reach it through the CAP website, and you will see that it really is a great program, including demonstrations and a free lunch. So I think with this, I will finish my talk, and I will leave you with Ruby. Her name is Ruby. So.